Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high atop the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Hillary Clinton is in favor of internet freedom. Portland city leaders are against employees smelling good, and the Washington DUI drivers may have to wear a scarlet Z.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, brace yourselves for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Tuesday, February 15th, 2011. City leaders in Portland are expected to pass a new policy discouraging personal scented products in the workplace, saying such products can irritate some people's allergies or asthma.
And just irritate some people in general.
Human resources departments everywhere are having to address this issue. Everywhere.
Oh, I'm sorry. Where?
Everywhere. Everywhere.
That's too late.
I'm sorry. Okay. I don't know. On Wednesday, commissioners will consider a policy that discourages perfume, aftershave, cologne, and the use of strongly scented powder, deodorant, and other personal hygiene
That's
products.
Just stupid. You can't have a policy strongly discouraging something. The policy either says do it or don't do it. The policy can't strong. What is it a policy that looks askance upon? A policy that hints in the general direction of?
It's a policy that raises an eyebrow at.
A policy that nods in the direction of passing a dictum which might cause excoriating stares.
Union spokesman Rob Wheaton said they've been in talks with the city over the issue for years. Wheaton said, if someone has a legitimate bona fide allergy to a perfume, it does create some serious consequences for them. Likewise, on the other end of it, I think employees can kind of get annoyed with not being able to wear perfumes. But overall, this ordinance that they're passing just codifies what's already an existing practice.
I think this falls under what we call the boo freaking who statute. You know, wear your makeup at home, Johnny. Sassy pants. Put on your obsession for men in the privacy of your own home.
Maybe it's just me, but I think the whole, oh, I'm allergic to other people's perfume thing is a lot like people having wheat allergies.
Well, that's just made up.
It's like there are some people who actually have this. but they're like maybe a half percent of the people who actually claim they do.
No, allergies are fabricated, but for the most part. But it's just that it's irritating. That's the thing. You just don't want to be like, you know, everybody gets in the workplace and you have to sit next to some chick who smells like a Mexican brothel.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, nobody wants that, especially if you get into an elevator with some guy who feels like the best thing to do is just to slather on Vitalis everywhere and then to drench himself in whatever the big-bosomed woman at the Nordstrom scent counter told him would make him irresistible. Here's the thing. You got pheromones. Let those do the job. That's really all you need.
Also, at the same time, though, and again, you are the fellow who is against the man telling you what to do.
That's not true.
If someone in the world...
That's not true. That's a drastic revision of what I've said. First of all, the guy... The man is the government. The government's mm-hmm. the man. This mm-hmm. isn't the government telling you can't do something.
Well, this would be city government telling its employees that they can't do something.
Right. Well, that's the man, but as opposed to a private workplace, is what I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
Like, and also, you don't have to work, you know, at this job, is my point. That when you're working for the government, they're not doing that as the government. They're doing that as your employer. And your employer has the right to tell you how to behave in the office.
Well, yes. But also, if someone offends in some way, aren't there already things in place for that they can be pulled aside and have this? I mean, I don't know.
I don't think so, because, I mean, how would you... It sounds like that's what they're trying to do. In other words, it sounds like that is what they're trying to codify because it doesn't already exist. And I didn't mean to jump all over about the man thing. I'm just saying, let's be very clear about this, that there is a line of demarcation to me. This is like when people say that... when people talk about... You know, the idea of censorship. And there's the censorship of the government telling you can't do something. And there's the censorship of being told you can't do something in the office. Now, granted, this office is for the government, but it's not like the government coming into your home. This is a job that you opted to have. Not you, but the people in this story. So if you opt to work someplace, it seems like you're, by definition... You know what it is? When you take a job, you know what you're doing? You're clicking agree on the terms of service.
Oh, yeah.
So...
I guess it's a matter of... You either ban something or you don't ban something.
That's my thing.
And this is not. It says the policy will discourage the use of it. And again, though, it seems to me that if there most employee manuals already have something in place that if you're doing anything that is causing discomfort to other people that you work with, you can be pulled aside by a manager and have that discussed with you. So is this one of those things that just makes it easier for those people? That you don't, in this case, you don't have to say, hey, your perfume, you know, smells like ant spray. You can say, well, it says on page 16 of the new policy that we discourage
perfume. Where is this?
Perfume.
Is this all city employees?
Yeah.
So because they're city employees, they may not already have something in place. In other words, they may, what we've seen in like our employee handbooks at a private employers, whether you worked at a newspaper or a radio station or whatever, they just may not have that. Like, the employee handbook, when you favor the government, they may be missing the phrase that says, like, hey, and, you know, bathe occasionally, wash your ass, and also don't drench yourself in a bunch of flowery nonsense before you come to the office. And also, they probably can't make a hard and fast rule about it, because then somebody will file some sort of nuisance lawsuit saying that it's part of their culture. You know, that it's part of my religious heritage. I have to smell like a lilac, you know, or whatever. Because that's what happens every time that there's, you know, some sort of law regulating your personal attire or behavior, is that somebody starts screeching that an invisible man wants them to wear it. I have to wear this hood. It's my religion. And so then, you know, that's probably why they're saying we're discouraging it, not saying no.
Okay.
Because then Gloria Allred flies in her broom and, you know, and wearing her puppy coat, and then it's a whole thing.
In a speech to be delivered Tuesday, which will be today, at George Washington University, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton urged repressive regimes to stop online censorship or risk a fate like Hosni Mubarak's. As social network-driven protests rock the Middle East, the White House plans to capitalize on the developments in its second major statement on internet freedom and side with dissidents.
Tonight, internet protests rock the Middle East.
Clinton says the internet has become the world's town hall, and everyone should have access to it.
So you mean cyber town hall, Don?
Yes, that's right. What I meant. Right.
The rights of individuals to express their views freely, petition their leaders, worship according to their beliefs, these rights are universal.
Unless you're
Julian
Assange.
Whether they are exercised in a public square or on an individual blog.
Wasn't she the one that wanted to have Assange like taken into a basement somewhere and have his legs broken?
I don't know. I have no idea what her opinion on Assange was.
I'm saying that because a couple weeks ago we played some sound bites from Hillary Clinton saying that she thought that he was a danger to freedom and a treasonous dissident.
I think there is something. Oh, yeah, I guess she did. There is something about her and her voice that I tend to just sort of like burn it out of my memory as soon as she's done. I dislike her on a fundamental level that I can't actually explain. Like, you know, you ever had the thing where you just walk into a room and you take one look at somebody and you're like, I don't like you.
It's a visceral dislike.
Yeah, and I feel that way about Hillary Clinton. So there's this thing, just like, I just don't give her space in my head ever. I don't know why. Maybe it's because she looks like she would eat my soul.
I was going to say, is it that you dislike her or just that you fear her because you realize she's evil and all-powerful?
I think it's a little of both.
Yeah.
It really is. She says the internet has given a voice to the masses, but it also opens the door to government abuses.
Security is often invoked as a justification for harsh crackdowns on freedom. Now, this tactic is not new to the digital age, but it has new resonance. As the internet has given governments new capacities for tracking and punishing human rights advocates and political dissidents.
I don't even know what she's saying there or where, what side of the issue she's coming down on. Because, again, it was just, I probably still got it somewhere, where when the whole WikiLeaks thing was happening and she was talking about, she was sort of on the side of everybody who said that he committed the greatest act of treason in the history of recorded humanity or whatever. And I think saying that he ought to be pushed through a small wire screen somewhere in a basement.
And apparently in the speech, she didn't say a single thing about that even hinted even remotely about any of the WikiLeaks stuff.
No, because what is somebody going to do, correct her? Hillary Clinton, you're wrong!
Particularly since this speech was all about how internet freedom is necessary for people to be free.
Also, she'll have you killed.
Yeah. She said that those who clamp down on internet freedom may be able to hold back the full impact of their people's yearnings for a while, but not forever. And added at one point, there's no app for online freedom.
Yeah. Here's the thing about Hillary Clinton. She sounds and looks and has the mannerisms of my seventh grade teacher, who I both loathed and feared. So there's a little bit of that. And I have several weird conflicting issues that all kind of conflate in my head around Hillary.
Well, I've always looked at her and Bill Clinton and always imagined that they're one of those couples that, like, his buddies were pulling him aside and saying, don't do it. Don't go there.
She's a ball breaker.
When he was in college.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I love her. I love her. She's great. She completes me. And they're like, no, seriously, she'll just control your entire life. He's like, no, I need that. You know, and
he's the guy at the beginning of the buddy comedy before they go off on a road trip.
Yes.
He's getting ready
to
get, he's the guy at the beginning of the Hangover. Yeah.
Washington drivers with a record of drunk driving could be required to have special license plates designated with the letter Z. Legislation introduced by Representative Norma Smith of Clinton, Washington, would require the drivers to pay an additional $100 for the Z plate, which would be good for 3 years.
I totally want a Z plate. I don't want to have to drunk drive to get it. Well, a plate with a Z on it be freaking awesome. Well, why does it have to be a cool letter? Why can't they get a letter that sucks, like B or F?
Yeah, G.
Yeah.
G is a very uncool letter.
Seriously, I. Who wants that? No one.
Yeah, the Z would appear as the last symbol at the end of any sequence of license plate letters and numbers.
Okay, first of all, that's a cool letter. Second of all, I now resent that I'm not able to augment my own plate with something. Thirdly, how are we going to honor veterans of the upcoming zombie war if we are already just taking the Z and marking license plates of DUI offenders with it?
And what about people with vanity plates that their words end with a Z?
Well, is it a regular Z, like in the same typeface? Or is it like a different letter, or a different color, rather, or a different size, do you think?
I don't know. It just says it would appear as the last symbol at the end of any sequence of license plate letters and numbers. I'm thinking that what it is they'll give you basically the randomly generated letters and numbers, then with a Z at the end.
I wonder if it'll be in a different color.
Because if a guy like the guy on Xbox who calls himself No Bitches, and he had a license plate that said that, you know, now everyone will think he's drunk.
Well, let's be honest, he probably is drunk.
Motorcycle drivers with drunk driving offenses, by the way, will also be required to have a Z license, but that they'll only have to pay $25.
Why are we giving licenses and letting drunk drivers continue to drive anyway? I guess that would be my question here, is if you've been busted for drunk driving, why is the license plate even an issue?
Yeah, the thing here is, if someone gets busted for drunk driving and then they do the things they need to do to retain their license, isn't that one of those sort of rehabilitation they ostensibly, at least on paper, have done everything that they were supposed to do?
Well, no. The reason the answer to that is no is because now this will just be included on the list of things they have to do.
Yeah, and so now it's like, you know, and Yeah.
It's like you either think the guy's a danger or he's not. If you think he's a danger, he just shouldn't be driving.
No, now it's just you're embarrassing people for something that they did, and if you have to get one of those after even just one drunk driving offense, I mean, you're not necessarily a danger per se, not in the same way as somebody who's just like driving drunk all the time. You could be somebody who just had like one too many glasses of wine on your way home and had the bad luck to get popped. So, but now you have to spend 3 years with like the scarlet letter Z on your license plate, you know, because, you know, we're not punishing people for things. We're just shaming them.
Well, I think the argument they would make is that shame is a punishment. And the way you know it's a punishment is that you don't want it done to you. Okay. We'll just call the final word there. You're listening to the Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, we got your entertainment news, also science on the march, or they match, depending on who you are and where you reside. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson Show at rickemersonshow.com. Today, clown watch, taser watch, clergy watch, snuff watch. Really, snuff watch.
Snuff watch.
Somebody I know? Somebody famous?
Yes.
Very famous? 1 to 5.
Pretty famous. You know who it is.
Scale of 1 to 5.
I'll say a 3.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll also be talking to the Alter Egos Society about Project Mayor Man, which is happening right now, kind of underway. The idea is that we will encourage notions of civic pride and pride in the belief in imagination and the power of dreams and ideas. By finding something clingy in which to dress our mayor, which is awesome. So we'll talk to the Alter Ego Society about Project Mayor Man, also Clown Watch, Taser Watch, Clergy Watch, Snuff Watch, and our recap of last night's episode of House. That is all coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Two University of Florida students died Saturday while trying to explore a Georgia cave. Walker County Sheriff Steve Wilson says friends of the victims lost track of them inside the cave.
They were able to communicate with them for about 30 to 45 minutes, but the witnesses tell us that after about 45 minutes, their voices became faint.
And worst of all, Injun Joe is still in there.
Rescuer Brad Tipton said, I've just got this whole Scooby-Doo mystery thing going on in my head now. It's like, don't be scared. It's really just that old real estate developer who doesn't want you to build on the Johnson place. Rescuer Brad Tipton says the victims didn't appear to know what they were doing.
It's not a place for inexperienced. It's not a place for wandering off from the group. Bad decisions were made from the very start. They made a bad decision to go to a cave that was well above their skill level. And they pushed the limitations of their abilities almost immediately.
As they would say in the film of the same name, they didn't respect the cave.
Made a bad decision to go to a cave that was above their skill level.
Mistakes were made, as they say. Did you see the movie The Cave?
I think so.
Oh, it's terrible. It's so bad. It's one of the worst things I've ever seen. It was glorious. I didn't pay for it, in my own defense. The only thing that was remotely redeeming was the awesome song by the band Nightwish, which played over the closing credits, which was sort of a song which was equal parts great and ludicrous. But there's this moment, because it's like, I don't know, a whole bunch of cave dicks getting ready to go and go spelunking somewhere. And then there's a creature of some kind. It was sort of a knockoff of The Descent, sort of.
The Descent was great. Okay, you didn't think it was great.
The Descent was okay. I'll tell you what. The Descent
scared me silly.
The Descent was good. This was not good in any way. But there's the great moment where one of the characters who, you know, is the sage voice of wisdom, and he says, most importantly, you have to respect the cave.
Huh.
And then they don't, and so then like something eats their bones. That's what happens to you, by the way, if you don't respect
the cave.
Something eats your bones.
I tend to respect caves.
If you don't respect Ernest Borgnine, same thing. Eat your bones. Here's Don Taylor.
The first evening of a Jeopardy face-off between all-time champion Brad Rutter and IBM supercomputer Watson ended last night in an underwhelming tie.
Did you watch it?
No, I didn't.
Oh, my God.
You were poo-pooing the Jeopardy versus the computer thing.
I wasn't poo-pooing it. Here's what I didn't understand. I didn't understand how it was a challenge for the computer to basically just do, even though it's not on the internet, because it's the idea is that it can't go online. That's one of the rules about it. I didn't understand how it was a challenge for the computer to basically look something up. Chess is sort of a parallel processing thing where there's the whole thing about how it's math, but it's also art, but it's also science, but it's also a game. And I was thinking, well, okay, I can understand that requires fuzzy logic. If you're on Jeopardy and it's basically a trivia show, how is it challenging for a computer to just look something up? What I did not realize, there was a whole thing on Nova about this. They did an entire series of, they did a whole investigation into and an analysis of the computer, which is called Watson, leading up to the match, which I think then continues tonight. I don't know if they're doing it just two nights, if they're doing it all week. But it's Ken Jennings, that dick from Salt Lake, and then watching the computer, and then that guy whose name I forget who's unbeaten.
By the way, you say that dick from Salt Lake. Ken Jennings is awesome. Ken Jennings is delightful. I've been reading his blog for years, and he is actually a very funny, and he seems like a really genuinely nice guy.
I will tell you this. I'm not saying that that's not true, but I'm saying you're the first person that I've ever known who said that. I've known lots of people who've said, boy, that guy seems like an ass.
Really?
I'm not saying he is. I'm saying he just seems that way.
And he might be in real life his online persona, reading his blog and reading just his writings about his day-to-day life and stuff. He's actually quite charming.
You can tell, by the way, that Alex Trebek didn't even like him. Because when Jennings got booted off that, when he finally lost after like 9 million years of being on Jeopardy. So he's been on there forever. I think at the time
Trebek said, good riddance.
He didn't say good riddance, but at the time Jennings
good
was
day,
the sir. he was the winningest contestant in terms of absolute games, but in terms of money in the history of the show. And he'd been on there and he'd already set like 9 jillion records, and I mean he'd become a household name and everybody was sort of watching the saga of Kenja. I mean, he really it was a big deal. Mm-hmm. And so then the game where he finally goes out, where he finally loses, which is like Bobby Fischer losing, you know, in Reykjavik or something. He finally loses. Trebek just says, and contestant Ken Jennings will not be returning next week. A brand new batch of contestants. Thanks for watching Jeopardy. Good night. No wrap up. No like, hey, Ken, let's reflect on your time in the show. Literally like 3 seconds. He said, thanks for playing, Ken. You won't be back next week. Next week, new contestants. I'm Alex Trebek. And that was it. So, did you watch? You didn't watch the Jeopardy, the Nova thing, or
no,
the match?
No.
It was awesome.
I've read a little bit about it though, and I know it's like they described here. Watson ran software that simultaneously uses natural language processing, information retrieval, knowledge representation, and reasoning algorithms. But also, again, does not have access to the internet.
Is this science? Are we in science here?
No, this was just regular news. This is news for everyone.
Sounds very much like science.
Oh, okay. Well, it could have been science.
Well, here's the thing. Can you make a note of this? And we always say that, and we never do. Can you make a note to also bring this up? Because otherwise it's going to take up the whole hour. We should talk about this more in the next show. Because there's, I have some sound from that as well.
Well, anyway, Watson is very bright, very fast, and has some weird little moments, as Alex Trebek put it. Got off to a strong, smart start, but actually got a bunch of answers wrong. And Watson and Rudder both finished with $5,000. So, haha!
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. If you want to get this program later on the day, you can do it via iTunes, also as a direct MP3 download here, or at legionofnews.com. You can also get it on your mobile device. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Three earthquakes, magnitudes 4.3, 2.5, and 2.3, hit Mount St. Helens this morning, and what were the latest in a number of recent quakes near the volcano. Seth Moran of the U.S. Geological Society's Cascades Volcano Observatory says the quakes are not a sign that Mount St. Helens is becoming more active than usual. He says the quakes aren't centered inside the volcano, but in an area north of it. The 4.3 quake happened Monday, people felt it in Vancouver, Washougal, Woodland, Ridgefield, Amboy, and Longview, as well as Columbia City in Oregon. The epicenter of the quake was 48 miles northeast of Vancouver, and there was no reports of damage. As of Friday, the background seismicity of Mount St. Helens remained at a normal level, according to the observatory. So 2 weeks ago, there were 5 earthquakes in one day, but none was stronger than a 1.8 quake. So what that means, I don't know. It could be the end of the world. Probably not. The Dalai Lama's nephew was fatally hit by a car on a Florida highway last Monday during an awareness walk for Tibetan freedom.
Sounds like you need to be more aware of what a highway is, first of all.
Jigme Norbu was struck about 25 miles south of St. Augustine, Florida, while walking to West Palm Beach on an unlit highway after dark. Norbu is the son of the Dalai Lama's late brother, and the event was scheduled to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the failed Tibetan rebellion against Chinese rule. The driver was not charged.
Maybe detail work isn't really their strong suit. Maybe that's why the rebellion isn't really working.
No. I got nothing.
Okay.
South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham says a Republican candidate who can beat President Obama has yet to emerge. Graham says he's looking for the most conservative person who's electable in 2012.
We're getting a second chance with the American electorate. We did well in 2010, and I think President Obama is beatable, but we got to nominate someone that can win over independent voters who do want smaller government and less spending.
Asked about the current state of Mideast politics, Graham said the creation of an Egyptian democracy would have a lasting effect.
The Egyptian people can create a democracy in the heart of the Arab world. It will be a more significant contribution to civilization than the Great Pyramids.
This is like when you're hearing a computer compress speech and it does it by just dropping random syllables to speed everything up. It's like about every third syllable is just gone.
If the Egyptian people can create a democracy in the heart of the Arab world, it will be a more significant contribution to civilization than the Great Pyramids.
Now, will it really?
Well, I would say yes, because the pyramids don't affect you at all in any way. Ever. Not once. Never have. Not gonna. At all.
Let's do science.
Here's your science on the march. Brought to you by Squires Electric. They wrangle science down to the ground, and then they rope it up calf-like, and then they bring it to your house, and then they stick it into your walls, where it's called electricity. You can find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com or calling 252-1609. That's 503-252-1609. Here's Don Taylor.
The fate of U.S. science funding is up in the air thanks to vastly different spending proposals from the president and the Republican-controlled House of Representatives. On Monday, President Barack Obama presented his 2012 budget request to Congress, which includes funding boosts to a number of science agencies over 2010 levels. The request includes money for National Institutes of Health, NASA, National Science Foundation, Department of Energy's Office of Science, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, and the Environmental Protection Agency.
I'm sorry, was that President Tom Poston?
No, that was President Barack Obama.
Damn, sorry. Okay.
Both the House of Representatives and the Senate need to hammer out an agreement about the budget before it can go into effect, but hopes for that look dim after the House Appropriations Committee last week proposed what it claims to be the biggest round of spending cuts in U.S. history. The proposed cuts affect the budget for the rest of the fiscal year, so funding for 2011 has so far been frozen at 2010 levels. The proposed cuts will be discussed in the House of Representatives this week and would need to be given the green light by the Senate and the President before they could go into effect. First, there were eight planets and no Pluto, but there might be nine planets again. Scientists say data from NASA's space telescope WISE may reveal a gas giant skulking in the outer solar system in a faraway place called the Oort Cloud, reports The Independent. Scientists have christened the potential planet Tycha and say it is 15,000 times farther from the sun than the Earth, if it exists at all.
Here's the thing about the Oort Cloud. They can't actually even see it. They can't see it, and there's like actual no visual evidence that it even exists. It's one of those things that they say is there based upon mathematical calculations. That no one has actually ever seen the Oort Cloud. They just deduced that it must be there by measuring other stuff.
Well, then how? Okay. Well, apparently they also say that there is probably a gas giant in the cloud that they can't see.
That's just one of those things where it's like, where you're just here in a room with the door shut and you go, I don't know, I hear some bumping around. I don't know, it must be the guys cleaning the roof. Maybe. I don't know. Could it be pigeons? Probably not. Sounds too heavy for a pigeon.
Like how they talk about black holes as if they actually are something that we know for a fact exists, even though they're something they just theorize exists.
We said that a couple weeks ago, and then somebody sent me a long link saying that they have now found, like, actual, like, look, over there! And, you know, sort of a black hole. Like, they found one in a closet somewhere.
Oh, okay.
Or, like, a guy looked in his shoe, and suddenly there was, like, a swirling vortex of infinity.
The new Jupiter-sized planet...
How is it a planet if it is made of goddamn gas? Goddamn, Pluto really gets just a raw deal every time. Fuzzy end of the lollipop. At least Pluto's made of actual stuff. Made of gas. So's my uncle. He's not a goddamn planet.
Well, what is it that makes something a planet? Is it that it has things rotating around it? Like moons? Is that what makes something a planet rather than just a big rock?
I don't believe so, but I don't really know the answer to that.
I mean, there is something specifically that qualifies something as a planet.
Yeah, probably.
Anyway, Discover Magazine says the star-supporting data presented by scientists based on comet orbits warped by the phantom planet is interesting but unconvincing, given the small sample size in their study. So there may or may not be a planet that may or may not be in this cloud that may or may not exist.
A planet is a celestial body orbiting a star or stellar remnant that is massive enough to be rounded by its own gravity, is not massive enough to cause thermonuclear fusion, and has cleared its neighboring region of planetesimals.
There we go.
And planetesimals are the are small little bits of detritus that eventually coalesce into a planet or an asteroid or a large rock or whatever. So it so it's big enough that it sort of cleaned up the area, and it is substantial enough that the gravity has formed it into a cohesive shape. So it's not just like a bunch of crap stuck together.
Okay.
So there you go.
North America's monarch butterfly has bounced back after its worst year ever. It is still, though, the fourth worst year since records began in 1993.
It's what?
The monarch butterfly.
But what was that sentence again?
It was still the worst year for the butterfly since they started keeping records in 93.
You wouldn't think that butterflies have bad years. That kind of makes me sad.
Yeah. The World Wildlife Federation of Mexico did a survey of the butterfly's Mexican heartland and showed that the insects wintering there since November colonized 4 hectares of forest, over double the area occupied last year. The area occupied is used as an indirect measure of butterfly members. In 2009, the butterflies faced storms as they migrated from Canada and the U.S., which devastated their numbers. Omar Vidal, the director of WWF Mexico, said, which is World Wildlife Federation, not the wrestling, said these figures are encouraging because they show a trend toward recovering after a record low. He says that illegal logging threaten the monarch's habitat, and it's now under control. But climate change and farming in the U.S. could deplete the food that the butterflies rely on roots.
It's just, you know, sort of a, butterflies are one of those things that you just sort of, like, you picture them, and it's and you just hear like the tinkling of fairy bells in the air.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, it's wonderful. But then you don't
get really up close to one, and you realize it's an insect, and they're kind of creepy.
I just don't really think about it like a typhoon coming and just wiping out a whole bunch of butterflies. You know, you don't really think of butterflies doing a whole lot except flitting around and landing on Julie Andrews, really. Somebody says that Dawn sounded physically angry at the idea of a black hole. You sort of did. It was sort of like the whole notion just made you cross.
It kind of does. Black holes make me angry.
Like we're shaking a sort of fist at it wherever it might be.
Damn black holes. Stupid black holes.
Okay.
That's all the science.
Really? All right, there we go. There's your Science on the March for Tuesday, February 15th, 2011, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more at 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609. You can get free estimates up top so you know about what it is going to cost you. They've been in Portland for going on 13 years. You can find out anything you need to know about the wiring job that's going to be done at your home, your business. If you're going to be expanding, you're going to be remodeling or repairing, they can make your life easier. They can help you with all or part of your wiring needs and issues at your home or business. That's Squires Electric, 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. They are the broad sponsors of Science on the March. Here's Don Taylor.
An armed hostage situation at a bank in North Carolina ended after police shot and killed the suspect who was holding one of the hostages at gunpoint. Cary Police Chief Pat Bazemore says the hostage negotiators did a good job of getting the suspect to release the victims he was holding.
I'm sorry, is this...
Hostages 1.
Okay, well,
Do you not have this?
Give me just a little moment there.
Yeah. I may have held that over from yesterday.
Yes, I believe you did. I've got the I've got the audio, I think, if you want me to, play it here.
We could move on to something else that you actually have.
Yeah, I believe,
have things that you have.
I don't even think I held over from yesterday. I think that is, in fact, held over from Friday.
Oh, well.
So,
I'm sure they're all fine now. The end.
Yeah.
Boeing. Let's do the one about Boeing. Boeing unveils...
Mowage.
Boeing unveils its next-generation passenger plane, the 747-8 Intercontinental, in Everett, Washington. Boeing VP and General Manager Pat Shanahan says they've also adopted a new color scheme of red, orange, and white, replacing the company's traditional colors of blue and white.
We want to make a statement. Good. We want to be seen as vibrant and dynamic.
What happens if I add extra reverb to this guy's existing reverb? Hold on a second.
Even more vibrant.
We want to make a statement.
That's not that impressive, actually. No. Well, hold on a second. Let me... What if I do this?
You have to lower his voice somehow.
Hold on, if I...
We want to make a statement.
No.
Hold on. Let's see if I do this.
Hold on, let me try this.
Okay.
All right, let's give it a go here. Where's my effects button?
We want to make a statement.
Ooh.
We want to be seen as vibrant and dynamic because that's the way we see our future.
People of Earth.
And the world of air travel.
So now we're just getting a message from our robot overlords.
Yeah, hold on, let me try one more here. Hold on a second. about 98? All right,
Doug, cue up his next, introduce the next bite
here. Well, this would be Vice President and Deputy Program Manager Elizabeth Lund, who says that this is an exciting and historic moment for Boeing.
This airplane will carry more people, more cargo, further, faster, more economically than any airplane in its class.
Now, tell me how much you liked my poem.
Sorry, a little Vogon humor there.
Yeah.
Vogon humor.
Yes.
Okay.
Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi has been ordered to court this April over charges that he paid for sex with a significant number of young women, including an underage Moroccan belly dancer called Ruby the Heart Stealer, and used his office to cover his tracks.
Maybe having sex with a Magic the Gathering card? Ruby the Heart Stealer.
Ruby the Heart Stealer.
Okay. Isn't that what somebody would call their blade?
I call her Ruby the Heart Stealer. And with her I shall extract a most bloody vengeance.
And it would be covered with sapphires and rubies and gems, and it would, he'd swashbuckle.
His indictment comes only days after tens of thousands of women protested him across Italy, and in an ironic bit of bad luck, the three randomly selected judge who will hear his trial are all female.
No fail.
Both Ruby, whose real name is Karima Al-Marouk, and the 74-year-old billionaire deny they slept together, but Berlusconi admits he did call the police on her behalf following her arrest last May.
And also, here's the thing. Look, he's continental. They behave differently there. He's obviously a hot-blooded man filled with passion. Also, a Moroccan, a belly dancer who calls herself the Heart Stealer doesn't get to bitch about anything like this. Not that she is, apparently. Sounds like she's fine.
Oh, and the rumor has it that the reason he came to her defense when she was arrested was because he thought she was Hosni Mubarak's niece.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that would be awkward.
While the trial could drag on for months, it comes at a particularly trying time for the prime minister. He's currently charged in three unrelated business trials and was recently stripped of political immunity by an Italian court. Last month, he broke with a former political ally, which makes him even more vulnerable. Berlusconi has denied the charges as part of a left-wing attack against him, although, according to Al Jazeera, Italians are starting to ask if this is the beginning of the end for their prime minister.
I mean, really, shouldn't he be able to show up with, if you have a... do we have a picture of her? Do we know what she looks like?
We saw her. Remember this whole...
Oh, is this that girl?
Bongo Bongo or whatever it's called. This
Congo Bongo.
Nah, something. Yeah.
Okay, this is okay. That girl?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
well, first of all, he ought to be able to just show up with the Moroccan belly dancer, Ruby the Heart Stealer, and just go, look at her.
Yeah.
Come on. And then turn to the people, because the judges are going to give him no sympathy.
He's 74. How much do they think that he was doing?
Well, I mean, technology has come a long way. Science makes anything possible now. And then just, he ought to just demand that it be televised, and then just give it to the people and just go, am I right? I mean, look at her. Come on.
Really, that should be it. It's like you go, look, I am the leader of an entire country.
I got problems.
Take a look over here.
Yeah.
Come on.
I mean, most guys can just go bowling at night or, just have a beer or something. It seems like that's not going to cut it if your stresses are significantly higher.
We're always surprised, by the way. Always, always seem to be surprised when the leader of a country, the leader of some kind of nation, is caught fooling around with younger ladies.
Yeah, it's a huge shocker.
We always seem to find this just shocking and surprising.
You know, it's so I just...
I just assume all of them are, whenever they get the chance.
I just had Lara read this book. She was casting around for something. She wanted to break up her novel reading with something fictional. And so I had her read this book, a fantastic book called A Vast Conspiracy, which is by CNN legal analyst Jeffrey Toobin. And he wrote it a few years back, but it is the sort of... From what I have read, and I've read a lot about this, it is the definitive account of the Lewinsky scandal. And all of the stuff that you sort of know publicly and all of the stuff that you don't know and the stuff that you've forgotten about and just the legal nuance that didn't really get covered at the time. And it was sort of great watching her read it because it's one of those things, the scandal happened, 13 years ago or something? I guess the impeachment was 13. Goddamn, 13 years ago. So she's reading this book, A Vast Conspiracy, and it was funny watching her just get angry all over again about, everyone involved. Clinton and Linda Tripp and Monica Lewinsky herself and Ken Starr. And it is everybody in the story. There are no good people. There are no, there's no one involved with the story that isn't morally reprehensible on some level. But just watching her just live that vicariously compressed down into one book is fantastic. But that's the thing. It's like, why would you, I mean, who is surprised by that at this point? I just don't, he's Italian.
I know, on top of everything
Come
else,
on.
He's Italian.
We know what that means.
A Florida man who allegedly wished his girlfriend a happy bloody Valentine's Day and threatened to cut off her head with a knife and choke her with a belt was arrested by police on Monday. Nathan Hemby, 33, of Key Largo, was arrested on Sunday after his 50-year-old girlfriend dialed 911 after locking herself in the bathroom. She told officers he had been threatening her in recent days with a knife, a box cutter, and a screwdriver. According to the victim's testimony cited in the sheriff's report, she said he held his hand over her mouth, put the knife to her throat, and told her he was going to cut off her head and, quote, grind up her body to sell for meat.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to snort. I'm just saying, here's the thing. It says here that he had been threatening her for several days.
Yeah.
Here's,
yeah.
Day one.
First threat.
There's the door.
Yeah.
I mean, sister, so, you know, I don't know if it's just like, where it's like the box cutting guys or the hottest in bed or something. It's like, there must be some sort of upside to him as a person. Maybe he's good with children. I don't know.
Yeah, she said he threatened to choke her with leather belts hanging on the wall of their apartment and had taken a pair of her underwear, telling her he was going to add it to his collection of the other girls he had to do this to.
Well, that's just sexy, though.
The officers responded to the call, discovered her underwear tucked into the back of his shorts, and weapons and belts, like she described, were found all around the apartment.
Yeah, that's not a thing that you just discover one day about a guy. That's a thing you know before you move in with
him. No, no.
That's not sprung on you.
No, I think you walk in and you find leather belts hung on the wall and weapons everywhere. And the first time he, like, threatens you with something. You don't, a guy doesn't just all of a sudden one day just say, and I'm going to grind you up for meat.
He escalates to that.
There was some kind of a hint probably earlier that this was coming.
Also, that guy doesn't wait until date number two to bring out a belt. That's the guy who,
yeah,
you know, in his Match.com profile says, like, and I'd like to belt you with a belt.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Coming up next hour, we'll have a clown watch, taser watch, clergy watch coming up next hour, snuff watch as well. Okay, snuff watch. So I'm trying to get a handle. I'm trying to get a handle on this. So is it... okay, male or female?
Male.
An entertainer or performer?
Yes.
Really? Okay, I'll just ask one more here. To the best of your knowledge, over or under the age of 60?
Over.
Really? Okay.
I'm assuming over,
yeah,
but yeah, it's got to be over.
Yeah, I got nothing. All right, well, we'll figure it out next hour. So that is coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com. That is rickemersonshow.com. I will also say that we're going to be talking to Benja Barker, and he is the founder, maven, and overlord of the Alter Egos Society, and we're going to be talking about Project Mayor Man. So that is next hour at rickemersonshow.com.
And we'll probably talk about my romantic Valentine's Day with my husband watching Mega Shark versus Crocosaurus.
Yes, we will. Also, what was the other thing we just mentioned? Oh, we'll talk a little bit more about the Jeopardy thing going as well. Oh, and then I've got a whole resolution to my refrigerator situation.
Oh, good.
And here's Don Taylor.
More than 1,700 white sturgeon were spending the winter at the Bonneville Dam, but the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers needed to move them to do some routine maintenance. Workers at the dam drained one of the fish collection channels at the Washington Shore Fish Ladder, and when they didn't, they found 1,700 sturgeon. Fish biologists say they have never seen that many sturgeon when they drained the channels before. It took workers 4 days to round up all the fish, load them into a big tank, and then use a crane to lift the tank over the channel wall and release them.
I like the idea of rounding up the sturgeon. Like you're sort of corralling them, you know, and you're running them up a side of a mountain or something with the aid of border collies.
I just find it interesting that they would just be surprised that there were all these fish just hanging out there.
Well, it's not that they're fishy, that they're sturgeon, which I think are generally considered endangered. That's the thing. Because they're sturgeon are weird, because they're not really huge.
Well,
yeah, because they're not even really fish. Like, they're kind of dinosaurs.
Kind of, yeah.
They've got these big plate things on them or whatever. I like the idea that there were seven, like, we would say, oh, no, we're running out of sturgeon. We just don't know, you know, we don't know where they are.
Now we know.
And then the sturgeon were all just, shh, don't say anything. They won't see us. And there was like 1,700 of them just like hiding in a river or something somewhere.
The fish ranged in length from 1 foot to 10 feet long.
How can something? How can 1,700 of something that's 10 feet long just be hiding and we don't see it?
I guess they just didn't look there.
It makes me wonder what's under the table in here.
Biologists still aren't sure why there were so many sturgeon spending the winter at the dam.
Well, I don't know. Maybe Bennett goes there in place. maybe it gets their blood working.
It's like the Catskills for sturgeon. Let's do our entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Tuesday.
Elle DeBarge, the 1980s singing star who was attempting a career comeback after a 16-year recording sabbatical, has checked himself into rehab for substance abuse. In a statement, the 49-year-old DeBarge said, "I hate to disappoint my fans, but it's necessary for me to take the time to work on me so that I may continue to share my music and my story with everyone."
I'm so glad.
"I thank everyone in advance for their prayers and well wishes, and I hope you will respect my privacy during this time."
That's a wish that's going to be granted, incidentally.
DeBarge was nominated for 2 Grammys this year for his album Second Chance and was slated to begin a tour this week, but Billboard reports that Musique Soulchild will be performing in his place.
My wife used to babysit for the DeBarge family.
Seriously?
Yes.
Oh, that's kind of insane.
Actually, my wife babysat for the DeBarge family and for you wrestling fans out there, the family of Jimmy Superfly Snuka. Because they're Tongan, and so there's a huge Tongan population in Salt Lake and the surrounding areas. And anyway, somewhere there's like a photograph of her like bouncing the littlest DeBarge on her knee or whatever.
Huh.
So it's all very whatever.
Ronnie Ortiz Magro, a star of MTV's Jersey Shore, has pleaded not guilty to an aggravated assault charge stemming from a September 4th, 2009 altercation in Seaside Heights, New Jersey. The altercation was partially broadcast on season 1 of Jersey Shore. Ortiz Magro knocked opposing combatant Stephen Izzo unconscious during the fight. And in addition to the assault charge, Izzo has filed a lawsuit. Superior Court scheduled a conference for March 7th. Elizabeth Taylor is resting comfortably in a Los Angeles hospital after being treated for congestive heart failure symptoms, and her spokesperson told the Associated Press she expects to spend a few more days there. At this stage with her history, they're going to want to keep her in for a while just to make sure they've fixed what they needed to fix, said her rep.
I think they're fixing it with formaldehyde, Don. That's the...
I can't believe she's still alive.
She's not still alive. That's why you shouldn't believe it. It's not true. It's a falsehood. You're right to not believe it.
Grosses for Broadway's Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark went up 3% last week, despite pans from news outlets like the New York Times and Variety. The show, which is still in previews until March 15th, grossed $1.3 million during the week ending February 13th, putting it just behind the box office champ Wicked at $1.4 million. This was the first week of sales after Spider-Man was hit with scathing reviews in several major publications on February 7th. Yesterday, the New York State Department of Labor issued 2 safety violations for the musical, which has seen 4 of its performers injured since rehearsals began last year.
I honestly don't know whether... we mentioned before the show today that I may be in New York for a few days next month.
You have to go see it. You have to.
Maybe if I can get comped or something. Laura and I were talking about this.
You get those cheap Rush tickets or something.
Maybe. She's like, baby, how can you not go see the Spider-Man thing? I'm like, because I have to pay to see what it's like.
And it'll be hundreds of dollars.
That's the thing is, it's going to be, I mean, even cheap tickets for that are going to be $75 probably. And also, it's terrible. And it's not like it's a terrible thing that's going to last 20 minutes. I mean, it's a terrible thing. It's 2.5 hours long.
Right.
And after a while, I think you're just there having paid $75 to watch 2.5 hours of terror. Think about the worst movie you've ever seen, and then imagine if you'd had to pay $75 for it. And that's just for me, by the way. So I just don't... I love my people and reporting on popular culture of the day to them, but I don't know that I love them that much. I don't know... Sorry. No offense, everyone. I just don't know that I care enough to pay $150 so Lara and I can see Spider-Man, so I can come back and tell everybody, hey, guess what? It's not that good.
It was the worst night of my life.
I just don't know. Yeah, I think I'm probably going to default to not seeing that.
On Kitchen Nightmares, Gordon Ramsay says he tries to inspire restaurant owners and reinvigorate their businesses, but he says that sometimes cooking the best food does not guarantee a successful restaurant. Ramsay gives his take on how to run a superior establishment.
Does it involve punching people?
And saying, F you!
Yeah, well, there has to be lessons in preparation and running a restaurant. It's a massive commitment. And it's not just about having a good night once a week or twice a week. It's every day. So, you know, buying basic ingredients and phenomenal product and then getting them into the kitchen and, you know, utilizing them and turning it into something magic and selling it and then becoming a sort of local hotspot and then, a busy restaurant and then full on a Monday night and then keeping it busy and then paying your staff. And it's got nothing to do with cooking. And so cooking's only 50% of it. And very few understand the mammoth task that's required to run a restaurant to that extent. So, yeah, it's huge. I mean, it really is huge.
Okay.
Variety reported on Monday that IFC has renewed the sketch comedy series Portlandia for 10 new episodes starting in the summer.
What will they possibly fill those episodes with?
I don't know.
Seamus has been our man on the Portlandia beat, sending sort of updates, and he. First of all, he said that he's had reactions from friends. He's asked people who are not from Portland. He's like, hey, you watching that Portlandia? And the people who are, he will ask them, what do you think about Portland based on that? And he said that many people, the people are only split into two camps. The first camp is, I'm never, ever going to go there because the people there just seem like a bunch of lazy hippies. By the way, these were people in San Francisco saying this, so that should trouble you. The second group was that they wanted to come here because they didn't believe that any place could possibly be like that, and that no place could possibly exist as it was depicted on the show. He did then go on to say that with every episode, he becomes more and more curious how they can possibly continue to find things to like, hey, here's the thing we're referencing, and it's from Portland, Zam. I haven't really seen much beyond the second episode, but he says in his assessment, the only way that show will continue to work is if they eventually just sort of give up on the angle, if they do the monk thing of just giving up on the angle of it being like the gimmick of it being from Portland and just make it a regular sketch comedy show that happens to take place here, where the long-running and recurring characters initially started because, hey, kooky Portland guy, but then it has to become about the guy himself, not about the setting.
Yeah, I've watched... it's what had three episodes now, I think.
Sure.
And I've watched the episode so far, and I still haven't been able to decide if I like it or if I just want to like it.
Well, I think if you're three episodes in and you can't decide if you like it, the answer is no.
You know, some of it is I won't even say very funny. Some of it is funny.
If I gave you a food and you were on your third plateful in 3 weeks and you went, I just don't know if I like it, you don't like it. You don't learn to like something unless it's bad.
It's a little more, less like a food and more like somebody you really like a lot has a really, really boring child.
Yeah.
And you're kind of like, oh, your kid is great.
No, you're training yourself to like something. You are not learning to. There is no learning to like anything.
Well, IFC says this is the first time they've ever picked up a show while it was still running. The show's averaging 235,000 viewers among adults 18 to 49, which is almost four times the network's primetime average. So, Jennifer Aniston has a hit on her hands.
Woo!
With Just Go With It. The film centers on a plastic surgeon, played by Adam Sandler, who gets his assistant to double as his ex-wife to impress his new girlfriend. Aniston believes Just Go With It is not just a romantic comedy.
Here's the thing about this movie, which I'm judging solely based on the finite amount of material I've seen in the trailers and promotional material. I'm judging this book completely, not even by the cover, but just like by part of the dust flap that I happened to see accidentally while I was rooting around for a Reader's Digest in the bathroom. It's like it hurts not just my eyes when I watch the trailer. It hurts everything from my eyes to my feet and in between, stopping at my soul to give it like an extended series of kicks. It looks so bad. The review, I always want to think everything's written by Vern, but it wasn't on Ain't It Cool. Whoever was it reviewed it on Ain't It Cool, Quinch or somebody, he just ended it with, he said, you know, this is one of those movies that gets made because everybody agrees to it because it's an opportunity to get paid to go hang out in Hawaii or Tahiti or wherever.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those friends on vacation in the tropics movies. And those, as William Goldman used to say, those are the easiest movies to make because everybody wants to go lay on the beach and get paid for it. And he ended it with some statement to the effect of, I hope that they really, really enjoyed filming in paradise for a few weeks because they deserve endless, just skillions of years in hell for what they have done to me by making me watch this. And he just ended it with, F this movie and everyone involved with it. And that is exactly what I feel like every time I watch just the trailer. I even had to see the whole thing and I felt that way.
Yeah, well, it's a romantic comedy starring Jennifer Aniston and Adam Sandler. Take from that what you will.
I mean,
have we learned nothing from cinema history that it's just going to suck?
But the thing is, romantic comedies don't have to suck, and movies with Adam Sandler don't necessarily have to suck, and movies with Jennifer Aniston don't necessarily have to suck. So therefore, there is no reason scientifically why this could not have been good. All of those things have been good at some point.
At some point, but...
So it's possible.
But basically, modern romantic comedies, Hollywood modern romantic comedies, Adam Sandler movies, and Jennifer Aniston movies, historically, have run about 80% towards suck in the last 15 years.
That's true. It's not a good... It's the trending downward.
And now we're putting all of them in one basket.
Are you chewing gum?
No.
Okay. Did one of your teeth just fall out?
Yes.
Okay. Really?
No.
Okay. Here's Jennifer Aniston talking about that thing.
I don't consider it, even though there's romance in it, for me it's really just a bold-faced comedy. I mean, it's just, it's hysterical, but there's
also... The romance slips in there.
It slips in, and in
most... We're done. We're done. F that. The hell with that.
God.
No, life is too short. I didn't know he was on the clip. To be fair, I didn't know it was Adam Sandler there. I thought they got her alone. That was like a reflex test, like that they give drunks or something. Yeah. I just had a boom off.
That's all the entertainment.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's killed the entertainment segment.
He did. He just. I hate him so much. He may be a lovely person in real life. He really is. But in 10 years as a professional film critic, the number of times I had to sit through his movies because I was being paid to do it, and I will never, ever, ever forgive him for the psychic damage he did by making me watch 8 Crazy Nights ever. The single worst thing I have ever sat in a theater and had to sit through.
Yeah. You know, and as I always say, you know, it's a tough business. So, you know, God bless anybody who can do it as a living, I guess. But the thing about Adam Sandler is even more so than most guys like that. I mean, I was going to say Will Ferrell, and Will Ferrell, you know, is a legitimately talented actor. So I guess it's not even a fair comparison. But the thing about Adam Sandler is Adam Sandler, like a lot of those guys, he just continues to be successful and to make movies like this. Totally, it is totally separate from and removed from and incidental to whatever his talent is or how much work he's putting into it. It's just because there's a section of people that like him.
Yeah.
Not even like him when he's on the screen. They like the idea of Adam Sandler.
And I still, you know, I do remember that the whole double punch of Happy Gilmore and
Billy Madison
were both really good movies. But it's like that was a long time ago.
Well, and he's been funny, and I mean, I found him funny in other things. I mean, I would say that not a great movie. I legitimately enjoyed The Wedding Singer. Okay. I wouldn't say that I want to go back and watch it again, but it was an amusing film. I don't dislike it. He's even been good in terrible films. He was in a terrible film, frankly, and to be honest, that I love is Airheads, which is an awful film.
Well, yeah.
Everyone in that film was bad.
I actually always forget that he was in that.
And everyone in that movie sucks.
It's not an Adam Sandler movie.
No, but he can be funny. And I had Rip Man, and I had such high hopes for that Funny People movie, that Apatow thing.
Yeah.
And boy, that was just an exercise in failure and disappointment, just sitting there and just having it. Just like sitting there and having a favorite toy broken in front of you. It was like something shiny and great that you just look through the store window, and then the guy says, "And here's your new Millennium Falcon." Bam! And then you just crash it right before he puts it in the bag for you to take home. He just crushes it right in front of you. So that's the frustrating thing about Adam Sandler is like he can be good if he really tries, but he doesn't need to try because he coasts on the idea of being Adam Sandler. And I was trying to think of anybody else who really does that. And first you think, well, there's a lot of people, but there really aren't. Like, Rob Schneider doesn't coast because everybody loves Rob Schneider, because here's the thing, everybody doesn't.
Yeah. Jim Carrey did, and
for
then,
a while,
and
yeah.
then his career just kind of petered out, and he kind of tried to make, you know, like, he was pretty good in Eternal Sunshine,
yeah.
but it's like, you know, people just got, the thing is that you go, the thing about Adam Sandler is that nobody's gotten tired of him. And it's really surprising how many comedians they find their shtick, and people get tired of the shtick a lot
right.
faster these days. Jack Black, Will Ferrell, Seth Rogen, for that matter. People got tired of the Seth Rogen goofy stoner thing.
Fairly
people
tired
quickly.
Of the Will Ferrell thing because
I know people who can't stand him.
Well, I know people that can't stand him, but I don't know anybody who was really, really into him. and then said, you know, I'm tired of watching those movies. I think he might be an exception to the people. I think people who don't like him now probably didn't like him ever. And I was at, frankly, in that camp for a while. I didn't like him at the beginning because he just struck me as just being kind of a jackass, you know, on SNL. And I don't mean in terms of character. I just got a weird vibe off of him somehow. Which, to be fair, I hadn't really judged him in a lot of his films. So I watched the movies and I was actually really impressed. I think, though, that you're right, though, with you were talking about Jack Black. I think Jack Black, and maybe if people are tired of Will Ferrell, I think the difference between that and Adam Sandler is the Jack Black character wears on you because it's so exhausting and manic.
Yeah.
Whereas Sandler's thing is like, he's just sort of a goofy. And it's like, it's so little energy for him to do that, it takes even less energy to watch it. And it's like, you know what Adam Sandler is like? Adam Sandler is like, I apologize for this. Adam Sandler is like one sort of really deliberately paced, soft, totally inconsequential bowel movement.
And on that note,
it's just, you know what I mean? Where it's not like, you know, it's just there. It's sort of effortless and it just sort of, you know, just. And then it's over. And then at the end, you kind of go, oh, well, okay. You know, and it's, whereas, like, you know.
That's what you want to end the show on.
Adam Sandler as a bowel movement. Am I wrong?
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just.
That's right.
That's where we're leaving it for today, huh?
Well, you know. Next hour, all bowel movements, though. Well, this has been, where's the thing? There we go. This has been Legion of News. Thank you for joining us for this Tuesday, February 15th, 2011. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemersonshow.com, where you can be amused by these hilarious hijinks for the low, low cost of just 32 cents a day. Do it, won't you, please? See you again tomorrow, that is Wednesday at noon, for another episode of Legion of News.